Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 78 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So, announcements this week. We got several new videos from Outlander Stars. One was a trailer that was kind of like a brief overview of what's to come in the upcoming second half of season one. And the other one was just flipping hot. Just hot.
Lord have mercy.
Like hot. And I think the reasoning behind it is twofold. One, Valentine's Day, of course. And two, 50 Shades of Grey came out this week, and I think they're trying to get, if there are readers of 50 Shades of Grey who have not gotten into Outlander yet, that they need to. So I think they're trying to grab into that niche market. Is it a niche market?
Outlander?
No.
50 Shades?
Yeah. Or just, you know, people who like reading naughty stuff.
I don't know. A lot of people read a lot of different stuff. A lot of people read a lot of different stuff.
Yes.
But the two videos, what were they?
Well, the one was a trailer. Did you already say this? That. And
okay, stop it. Okay.
No.
As you said, the trailer is little flashes of stuff that's to come.
Yeah.
In general.
With Jamie's voiceover.
Exactly. The first time we hear his voiceover, I think. No, that was his voiceover in the first trailer for the second half of the season, right?
Yes.
Because this is trailer number two.
Well, the first trailer that they did, that was just Jamie.
That's true.
Like, but it was like him standing at about the river.
About an...
Okay. He was standing at one of those. And
you can do it. Just flip your R, girl.
I'm not going to do it. And then it was just like this big, long voiceover, which was very reminiscent of how the entire series started with Claire's voiceover, with her standing in front of the window with the vase. And from what I understand, I mean, I have not seen the 50 Shades of Grey movie yet. And I'm not sure if I will in the theaters. I'm more of a watch, you know, adult movies at home, because that sounds bad.
That's going to come out. Okay.
No, it can stay. No, I will clarify.
I will take it out. Just say.
I'm just saying. I will clarify, because when I go to the movies, I almost always have to go see kids' movies. I don't really get to see, like, grown-up movies. So I should have said grown-up movies and not adult movies. So, but if I were watching adult movies, I would definitely do that at home as well. But from what I understand from the people who have seen it, that the movie was not nearly as hot as they thought it should have been. Like, they weren't as steamy as they thought it would. I think that just that trailer probably was steamier than that entire movie.
Well, and we haven't seen it, so. We don't know jick about jack.
Thing now?
Summer, no. Just okay. Because I say it doesn't mean it's a thing. It just comes out of my mouth.
We also got a couple new images from the Outlander Stars Instagram account.
More than the three or four we're going to talk about, because there were so many.
Oh my god.
They were cute. It was a lot of Valentine's Day stuff that we don't need to rehash all of that. There's a lot of Valentine's Day stuff. Go look at the account. It's cool. But we're going to talk about the three kind of more publicity type things.
Yeah, there are three
character stuff.
Character shots with like a super close-up.
His eyeballs. I love it. Or his eyeball.
Yeah, they're super close-up, and then they've got the little saying. And they're all like actually like twists of like familiar phrasing, mm-hmm. phrases. The one on Blackjack says, "You haven't seen Jack."
And it's a cute, as you said, a cute play on words, cute play on phrases. But for Truzel, if you haven't read the books, you know this is true. But if you haven't, excuse me.
Back up, rewind.
If you have read the books, you know this is true. If you haven't read the books and you haven't, I don't think a lot of things, some things have been spoiled. Like when Diana said kind of at the end of that thing, January 11th of last year, when she was saying, "Oh, Sam, I look forward to seeing you blanket in blanket."
Right, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that kind of gives it away. Doesn't give you the whole story, but it tells you kind of the big shebang. But it's relatively fair to say that there's a good number of people, probably most actually, maybe not most of you listening to this, but most people in existence who have access to this show or whatever, that you don't know what's going to happen. And I think I almost said I think that's a good thing. I don't know if that's a good thing. I think for the story's sake, it's awesome to go in not knowing, because that's something that Summer and I will never, ever, ever be able to experience. The show is new to us. It's a completely different animal. We respect it and love it for its own thing. Of course, we can't help but compare because we have been fanatical about the books. But we don't get really disappointed or upset if something is not exactly the same as the book or something is left out, because we know it's its own creation. It's a different animal. Fair enough. However,
I can't wait for the internet to explode.
Oh my gosh.
It's going to explode.
Honestly,
when that happens.
I don't. What, episode 109? Or
no,
episode
Wentworth.
One. Okay, yeah. So if you don't know what that means, God bless you, because you're living in a very nice world. And no, I guess I'm being a little facetious, but because I do not even pretend to know about every single one of our listeners' worlds. But basically, it's a nice world when you don't know much about Jack, or when you don't know Jack. When you know what he's truly capable of, let's just say, exactly, you ain't seen nothing yet. So, and those of you who have read the books will commiserate virtually together.
So that was the first of the three, was the picture of Tobias as Blackjack saying, you haven't seen Jack. The second was a close-up of Claire. On hers, it says, at long last, which I think is cute.
It's very cute.
It's a beautiful close-up. I really like the sepia tones. I think it's...
It's just... It's very classy. Yeah. Classic.
And, of course, my favorite is Sam Heughan's and as Jamie. And it says, some like it, Scott. In fact, I don't know anyone who doesn't. But super good. Super cute. We also got a Valentine's message from Sam and Katrina on set. It's just a cute little video where they basically said, Happy Valentine's Day. And then Sam made a Sassenach reference. And then I think Katrina just rolled her eyes at him.
Pretty much. Like usual.
Okay, so this kind of made me excited.
And I don't. This just made me giggle.
I
don't
know
why.
I need to preface this by saying I don't own any of these, but I see them all the time, and I'm like, I wish I was into something enough to want to buy them because they're cute. They're called
Funko Pop.
No, hang on. Pop Vinyls.
Pop Vinyl is the site. It might be the company.
It says the new Pop Vinyl concepts. Okay, well, they're the... I'm sure you've all seen them. They're the Pop figures. They're, like, little tiny miniatures...
With huge heads.
That have huge heads, but they're all, like, character-driven. Like,
yeah, they are, but they have... They're anime-esque.
Yeah.
Kind of the...
I mean, they're not true-to-life replicas of people.
No.
They're,
oh, gosh,
they're very...
Goodness,
I mean,
no way. But they're entertaining.
Super, yeah. Oh, they're super cute, and they're collectibles.
And this might be the only Outlander-related stuff that Summer lets her six-year-old play with.
Oh, no. If I bought these, they would not be
played
with.
Go on a shelf.
They would not be played with. And maybe just by me. But it looks like they're coming out with 5 Outlander-related ones. There's going to be one of Jamie, one of Claire, one of Frank, one of Blackjack, and one of...
come on. Who's the baldy
with
the big beard?
Sorry, give me a second. Dougal. One of Dougal. It took me a second. But
yeah,
I almost feel like they should have made... The Blackjack, Frank Randall one, like, interchangeable. Like, it should be the
that,
same one.
With a different hat.
Yeah.
That's
just
true.
Change the hat or something.
But you had to... Come on. I mean, the uniform you had to change, so probably not.
They're plastic, so you can't really take their clothes off and put them back on. So Factory Entertainment is at the Toy Fair, New York Toy Fair. And it looks like in their booth they do have some Outlander-related items. So I'm sure we'll see those floating around the internet sometime soon. And lastly... It was announced that one of our favorite
people ever,
yes, has been nominated for an Audi. I want to keep saying Audi, and I know it's not because that's a car.
Yeah,
was nominated for an Audi for her performance of "Written in My Own Heart's Blood." So, congratulations to Ms. Davina Porter.
And yeah, there's so much to say, and there's nothing to say. I mean, we put up a link to the recorded books announcement, because that was who obviously it was with and through. And also I did a screenshot cutaway of the screenshot and highlighted the portion of the announcement in the category, which was general, was fiction. You know, We have to have her back. I mean, I'm not going to say, I never ever tire of speaking, mostly just hearing her, because after the first like 10 minutes, you kind of like, you don't forget, but I can get past the whole thing. Like I'm talking to Claire, but it's always like talking. It's so weird. It's so weird, but it's so amazing. So congratulations, Davina. So happy for you.
One of these days I'm going to make Ginger take a picture of me when we do these interviews, because I literally sit there like with my hand, like elbows on my knees and my hands like fisted up under my chin, just like so like happy and smiling. And I can't stop smiling. Like it's so exciting to me to have these interviews and I'm just like a kid in a candy store.
I'm not sure when it was. I think it was last fall. I don't know. I want to say October, but I could be wrong. Anyway, the Audis they're held, and Davina attended them last year as well, but they are held, I think last year was in New York, at a hotel or at a conference center. And there are a number of accounts, as you know, press attended as well, or at least people in the room, in the building, are blogging, live blogging, or live tweeting about it. So you could see as they went through the categories who was nominated and who won. And she was nominated last year for something else, because obviously there hasn't been a between Echo and the Bone and Moby, there hasn't been anything Outlander related that she's... Oh no, there has been I think she did one of the in-betweeners, yeah, the Bulges. But yeah, so this is the most recent big book that she's been nominated for. And so we wouldn't have had a chance to follow any of the big books since we started our podcast as far as her nominations go. But anyway, when this comes up, and I think it's in October, November, we'll have to... We obviously can't live tweet it because we're not going to be there. But we will definitely follow it, and we'll have popcorn, I'm sure. We'll do our own little Audi. You almost got me saying Audi. Audi. Any Audi. We'll do our own little Audi award party. Audi party. Okay.
And that is announcements this week. So now we will move on to our read-along. This week we are reviewing and speaking about chapter 17, entitled Possession.
So, the Comte and Charles Stuart may be up to something fishy, hmm? Murta is doing his due diligence as a private dick for the Paris enclave Frasers, and keeping an especial...
Really?
And keeping an especial watch on the Comte Saint-Germain. He doesn't see anything remarkable, but does note that Charles arrived and stayed for an hour. So Mr. Charles is requiring Jamie to go out on the town with him more and more. Claire thinks it's to do with the party announcing his lover's pregnancy as that of her husband's, and not any effect of the Comte himself. But these trips could last almost all night, and they were beginning to bug. Jamie says he's so distraught that he seems to have forgotten he's the... I was just about to read this. Here's another typo. That word won't fix. I'll read it as it is. Jamie says he's so distraught that he seems to have forgotten he's the heir to the thrones of two countries. Heir, of course. Claire replies, let's hope he stays that way. Then one morning, there was no Jamie in the bed.
The bed?
In the bed. And nowhere in the house.
What's wrong with you?
I wasn't in the house. And nowhere in the house. Claire sends a footman to Charles' house to see if he's there. Then she asks for Murta to be sent to her. She has two thoughts. One, that he spent the night at Charles' villa. Two, that something had happened to him. Murta had been sleeping, so he didn't know where Jamie was either. Claire's mind is going all over the place. What if both Charles and Jamie didn't come home last night? What if there was an assassination attempt on Charles? And. Ellen G. writes, Murta to the rescue, at least his presence. He never went anywhere to look for Jamie, I don't think. I think you're right. Then she, Claire, remembers the attempt on Jamie's life when they'd met Fergus. There were dangerous gangs on the streets of Paris. They are telling Claire, they being Murta and the maid, to get dressed or she'll catch a chill, that she should be in bed. It's sunrise. She sees all kinds of people on the streets, servants cleaning and sweeping, barrowmen selling their wares, and a delivery cart, but no sign of Jamie. She goes back to bed to warm up, but can't sleep. She keeps thinking of the Comte. She attempts to connect him to the attempt on Jamie's life and is pretty convinced he was behind the attempt on her own. Ellen G. shares, so Claire is being put to bed by the maid, but she goes to the window and listens to the goings-on in the street below. I've got to say here that this would be spectacular in the show if they are willing to put everything in the chapter in. As always, Ellen, ditto and tritto. Summer and I want everything, but...
Tritto?
Ditto, it's after tritto. Come on, it's a thing. That one is that a thing. Is a thing? It is a thing. Then Jamie comes home. He's tired. He lies down next to her, and she demands to know what happened to him. And before we go on, I have to say something I told Summer as I was taking the notes for this chapter. I was like, this chapter is like 79.9% dialogue. There's so much dialogue in here that I don't want to copy the entire chapter out because, you know, I like to have some lines in there that are funny or that are poignant or that are important, but I don't need and I don't want to type everything out. I didn't, but I did much more than I would have liked. But I tried to paraphrase a lot or to summarize, so... I think you guys will agree, this is one of the best chapters of dialogue. I mean, there's so much in here. It's so character-rich. It's beautiful. So Claire demands to know what happened to him. He replies, I need a bath. And she agrees. She calls for the maid to prepare a hip bath. Then, and I love this line, I turned my attention to the Hulk on the bed. She takes off his shoes and stockings and started to loosen the buckle of his kilt, and his hands go to his crotch. She asks again what happened to him. He had long scratches on his thighs and a bite on the inside of one leg. The maid who was filling the bathtub says, un petit chien, a little dog. Though Claire isn't fluent in idioms of the times, she does know that les petits chiens, the plural, quote, walked the street on two legs with painted faces. So, doesn't take too much of a leap to think it might be the singular of that. Love the question he poses to Claire. I wouldn't suppose a gently reared young lady such as yourself would be familiar with an alternate meaning of the term soixante-neuf. She says, and may I ask just where you encountered that particular interesting number? His reply, it was suggested to me, with some force, as a desirable activity by a lady I happened to meet last night. I love his use... For now. Right now, he's come home, he's tired. He's still in it, but he's in a pretty decent mood, right? He's not upset, he's not angry, he's just mostly tired and happy to be home. So he's calling les petits chiens ladies. Claire insists on knowing exactly where he'd been. He's slow on the answer. Well, let me see. And I wrote, LOL, like he really needs to think much? Like, being drawn out, him drawing this out will help his case in any... Like, let me think about that. Sassenach? He'd had supper at a tavern, then to the Duc de Castellotti's for cards, then a tavern, and then another establishment like a tavern, but that had ladies with talents. He says, God, they did it in public. Right between the saddle of mutton and the boiled potatoes, with the quince jelly. So specific, Jamie. He describes how Castellotti took the fat one with the red hair and a small blonde off to a corner. She asks what exactly he'd been doing. And he's honest. He says, watching. He says there wasn't a much choice about it under the circumstances. Claire fingers something in Jamie's spodden and brings it out. It looks like the ring of someone with sausage-like fingers. Jamie is wearing a full-on blush, and I almost just read that as bush. We learned that it isn't a ring for a man's finger. Claire gets it, but says she's heard of them before, and Jamie is scandalized. Ellen G. writes, so not just relying on what Jamie says, Claire goes through his man purse, his sporran, and finds a very interesting object. Just want to make clear that the Marquis de Sade is from this era, and sexual exploits abound. And she shared with us the Wikipedia link for the Marquis de Sade, which we'll share with you.
I just want to know why he kept it.
Yeah, that's not like, a question for me, but I get
it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did we ever find out if it's a gift or not? Maybe later?
Maybe. I don't know. That's...
Claire wants to see if it fits him. Jamie covers himself and then says, "Bad enough to spend all night defending my virtue without having it subjected to comment in the morning." Jamie insists that, as a married man, he surely wouldn't participate in such things. But Monsieur Millefleur, though married and with two mistresses, is French. And he tells Claire, "That's different." And the Duke is Italian. That's different, too.
Oh, it does say in the chapter that it was a gift.
Oh, my gracious. From the Castellotti?
Yeah. It wow. Has a, it had his like, insignia on it.
Yes.
Coat of arms.
Jamie gets into the tub and drops the quilt and lowers himself quickly. But not quick enough. The maid gets a peekaboo. She says, "Énorme!" and crosses herself. Claire says, "C'est tout. Merci bien." That is all. Thank you. Jamie gets to washing, and Claire asks gently, "Did he really have to?" But can't quite get the words out. Jamie laughs, and Claire says, "Well, with the evidence you brought back..." He says he watched only, but Claire is right. You don't get scratches and bites from watching.
No.
Now, this is interesting. Claire recognizes something in herself that she doesn't like. She felt like a jealous biddy. And I think the anger is directed at herself for feeling that way and at Jamie for putting her in a position to feel that way. What do you think? She doesn't like that she observes that she is feeling like a jealous biddy.
I mean, I know that I don't like feeling jealous. That's like, you know, you want to be...
It's such an ugly feeling, isn't it?
And it is. You want to be cool, you know? You just want to be cool. You know he didn't do anything.
And when it comes to your husband, nah. I mean,
I would definitely... I don't like feeling that way, and I would definitely not have kind feelings for the person who made me feel that way.
She tries for a light tone, but doesn't quite deliver. She says, "Or are those the scars of honorable combat gained in defending your virtue?" Jamie was about to reply, but then thought better of it, and he settles on, "Yes." Then he says, reaching out the soap to her, "Will you help me wash my hair?" His Highness vomited on me in the coach coming home, and I reek a bit, all things considered.
Ugh. Oh, my God.
That's gross.
Haven't we talked about this before? How much, like, being thrown up on is, like, the worst thing ever?
I don't think I've ever been thrown up on unless my own got on me.
You obviously don't have a child.
No, that's true. Well, okay, I take it back. I've been cat barfed on.
No, I've woken cat up. I've woken up to being
barfed?
Vomited on.
Oh,
like.
Yeah.
And you know as it's happening, you're just like, this is not going to end well. This is awful. Because now not only am I covered in vomit and my daughter's covered in vomit.
Makes you
the,
want to
the
vomit.
The bed is covered in vomit now. So yeah. Then you have to strip the bed.
Pretty much from the ages of 0 to 10 or 16. Well, not 16 because that 16-year-old probably shouldn't be sleeping with you. But any child who still sleeps, you know, even...
Well, she wasn't feeling well.
And no,
she,
that's I what was... I'm saying. If you're... Yeah, but still, but she's young is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Anytime... You live with a child or you have a child and there's any chance that the child might sleep with you or whether it's sick or just wants to snuggle, whatever. It's not a bad idea to have a mattress cover.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, no, there's that's a mattress what I'm trying cover.
To like a plastic mattress cover. First of all, that's gross.
Yeah.
Second of all, using a soap cake to wash your hair. Have you done that?
No.
Ever, never?
Never.
Lush makes great shampoo bars. And I used to use them, a few times. I haven't used it for years.
I don't think I've ever seen a shampoo bar.
Oh, we'll give you a link. Go to lushusa.com. And no, they're not sponsors. They're not sponsors. We just really like Lush. Have you been to Lush? Oh, my gosh. Attack on the senses. You walk in and you walk into a wall of smell. And I don't mean bad. I mean good. It is overpowering. It's a lot of smell. I like it. But it's... Oh, my gosh. It's like you can smell it almost like, across the
street.
Well, it's
like there are certain stores that have a specific scent.
Oh,
and I know that, like, the Body Shop always smells like
that
peaches and mango to me when I walk by. And then Bath and Body Works just smells like yum.
It's along those lines, but it doesn't have any SLS, if you know what that is. They say, you know, they have vegetarian, vegan products, and oh my gosh, their stuff is just, we have to go there someday. It's just fun. And I just, in looking at the link for this, to get the link, I noticed that they do parties for little ones, not little ones, like, you know, kids, like young girls, probably like a young girl getting into, like, not really beauty products, but...
Wait. What kind of party? I'm confused.
Oh, you have a max number of people.
Okay.
You can add people at cost more money. For a set fee, you can have up to like 6 or 7 people. And you go into the store. They do like a store tour, like they show you what everything is, what the areas are. And then they do like a demo. And everyone gets to participate and like have their own little goodie thing. And then they do something else. And then there's a break. And they have another demo. And they have like a closing. It's like... Think about it as Build-A-Bear. You don't get to, I don't think, build your own product, but you get to test a lot of things out and get samples. You may
not
have the whole
store down.
Well,
that's not cost
probably
efficient.
Not. But anyway, if anyone's been to a Lush party, let us know. That's kind of cool. I'm thinking about doing it for my party,
and it sounds like it's a lot more fun than it is.
That's true. Actually, that'd be awesome. Have a Lush birthday. You go to the store, and then you go out and you get stuff, and you come whatever. Yeah, there, you could have a Lush themed birthday.
They should
I
have
like
a BYO alcohol, whatever. At their Lush store for the Lushes.
So, as she takes the soap and obliges him by helping him wash his hair, she feels the welt of the scar in the back of his head. Isn't it true that you can be fighting with someone or playing verbal joust and they're not at the level of calling each other names yet, but there definitely is tension. And isn't it true that just at the height of tension, you can something will happen or a memory will be sparked and you are remembering something that reminds you of just how special this person is to you? Or, like, in this case, yes, he's special to her, but she felt his wound and was reminded, you know, like, this is my beloved husband and he's been through a lot kind of thing. She doesn't necessarily change right there, but it brings her back home as to what this is, who he is, what he is. And as he leans forward to give her access to his back, she sees the scars on his back. And again, something she sees, and she's taken back to the time when he got those wounds, and she calls it Jack Randall's Christmas gift. And she remembers. She says, Diana writes, "I touched the scars gently, my heart squeezed by the sight." So this is what I mean by you can have this high tension that's not a pretty thing, and then something that you see or something that you remember kind of snaps you back into, you know what? What's really important is myself. And this person that I love, and he's been through so much, and nothing happened, or he says nothing happened, and so this is not a big deal. She is so moved, she goes to kiss the back of his neck, but stops. Jamie's all in drowsy contentment, and Claire is put off by the hickeys on his neck. That's
rightfully
a little bit...
so.
Yes, now this is actually a good question. Ellen G. writes, "If Jamie knows Claire would see the hickeys on his neck, why the hell did he ask her to wash his hair?" I, personally, this is Ginger, I think he forgot about him.
Okay, personally, this is Summer. I think that they are on the back of his neck and he can't see them.
That's what I'm saying.
He wouldn't have known they were there.
No, but he could have put two and two together. He's not a stupid man. He's a smart man. He knows if someone's sucking on his neck or not, back or front or side. But yes... if he had been looking in the mirror before he left or as he was collecting his stuff to go, he wouldn't have seen him, and it's easy to forget. He knew that there was a possibility they would be there, but I think he just completely forgot that. So her reaction to this was to pour water, the cold water of the ewer, all over Jamie. And then his quick reaction to the water is almost slapstick in its effect. Claire gets the ewer full of cold water and dumps it over his head. She beats him to speech. Sure, he didn't enjoy it. When you have hickey marks on your neck, even if, well, I mean, okay, there's doesn't promise you that he enjoyed it, but definitely means he was sitting still long enough to get them.
That's what I was going to say. What that means, I mean, you aren't just like, I mean, he's not that
he's
much
not
of a
that
bruiser, you know? It's not like, you know, he's touched and it happens. Like, there's an effort that's put into putting a hickey on somebody, and it's not something that can be done that super fast. I mean, it can be if you've got, like, you know, mad Hoover skills, but generally they're not, you know, instantaneous. They take a little effort.
Hickeys.
And yeah, and someone
they
being
do,
still
and they
long
get,
enough.
Well, that's the thing is you got to be still. So you are
can,
cooperative.
They do kind of hurt. I mean, you can feel it because it's breaking blood vessels.
Jamie admits that he had wanted to rut with them. He doesn't judge, though. He says, "Enough to make me feel sick with the thought of touching one of the sluts." Dang. He goes from ladies to sluts. So you see, his mood is one of, I'm tired, but I'm happy and content to be home, and I want to lay down with my wife, to, being accused of something, having to defend, he's defensive now, water's been, cold water's been poured all over him, and now the ladies are sluts.
Well, look what they did.
I know! They gave him the Mickey's, Hoover treatment.
The Hoover treatment. Okay, that's what you're calling this chapter. The Hoover treatment.
He asks her, what would she have done if he had lain with one of them? She says, without missing a beat, I'd kill you. He's shocked. He's like, mouth drops open and his eyebrows go up. He's like, kill me? God, if I found you with another man, I'd kill him.
Yeah, it's true.
Mind ya, I'd not be very pleased with you either, but still, it's him I'd kill. He asks her if she wants him to prove it to her that he hadn't been with anyone. He says, hot water. It won't take long. Does he mean the water's affected him and it won't take him long to be roused? If so, I thought that was cold water that had that effect on gentlemen.
Well, the cold water causes shrinkage for sure.
Which takes time to come back from.
Right, but what I think is that he's saying that he needs the warm water to counterbalance the effects of the cold water.
Ah, so he is saying, it won't take long, right. I just need some hot water.
Right.
Got it, okay. Then she says, that's what you think. As in, it'll be a cold day in hell before he gets near her again? Or is she's talking about shrinkage?
She's so feisty.
Then he gets his dirk and says to her, go ahead. You didn't mean to be forsworn, I hope. Being so sensitive to your honor as a wife and all. Mm-hmm. So he takes the dirk and he puts it, the hilt, toward her and basically says, you know, kill me. Do it. You said you wanted to. Do it. Claire's already feeling ridiculous and turns away. Jamie drops the dagger and she tells him where to get a clean towel. So she's not heartless. She's like, you know, this has gone far enough. After some more silence, they say in unison, I'm sorry. She laughs and then they come together. Now the text says, minutes later, and I wrote in parentheses, does that mean indeed it didn't take very long? He says it was too close, meaning the events. The events at the last tavern type body house place. Jamie says the feeling that he felt with them was too close to what he sometimes feels for Claire, and it didn't seem right to him, he says. Quote, I always thought it would be a simple matter to lie with a woman, and yet I want to fall on my face at your feet and worship you. Now the text says he dropped the towel, so I guess they are still standing.
Yeah.
And he still wants to force her to her knees, and. And then he shares a connection. Such things, the knowledge of them, came to me soon after Wentworth. That goes back to one of our discussions of one of the final chapters of Outlander. You remember that? Where we're talking about the physical stuff that Randall did to him. But it was the emotional and spiritual, if you want to call it that, emotional things that scarred him more. Right, that take longer to heal from. And basically, in Outlander, we hear him saying how Randall forced this connection within him between the stuff he was doing and Claire. He wanted, and that was like the most, that's mental torture, right? Because it's not just, I can refuse to think about my wife and you can do it, you know, I'm giving you my body, do what you're going to do because, I saved her. She's free. Yet, this whole thing with continuously invoking Claire's name while he was abusing him. Not just abusing him. Well, it was all abuse. But bringing him pleasure and invoking her name. And then shortly thereafter, bringing him pain. And, oh, man. Yeah, all that. So, in Outlander, we hear about this connection or this association that Randall forces upon him. That Randall makes on him. And here in Dragonfly and Amber, in this chapter, Jamie is saying something, not the exact same lines, but he says such things, the knowledge of them, came to me soon after Wentworth. What this reminds me of is as he's healing, he's thinking, this is a person whom I love and cherish, and I want to use and abuse. Not to hurt her as in like permanent damage, but to be rough with her. And Jack helped him basically get that knowledge. And
not completely. I think Claire started him on that path.
Yes.
He just took it like a hard left.
Randall went away. Yeah. But I think the difference is, whereas he still may have had, if Wentworth had never happened, which, okay, wouldn't really bring us to this book. But if something else had happened, but not that exact same stuff, and Claire had done the exact same thing, and then we're here now in the exact same case, but there was no Wentworth. He still may have, and he had the night out on the town. He still could have this conflict, but since he did go through what he went through at Wentworth, he's not just conflicted like, you know, how is it that I can want to love and worship and pleasure and cause mild pleasure pain to this woman whom I love and adore and want to worship, but also like take to town. There's that, but I think what makes it worse, as you said, the whole left turn thing, basically, I agree with you. He was discovering that about himself, and Claire helped introduce that to him. But I think after going through what he went through with Randall, what mm-hmm. Randall did, he has experienced pleasure that he didn't ever want to experience or ever plan on experiencing by the hands of another man, right? Wasn't his plan. But he admits that it was pleasure. And he experienced grotesque, obscene pain by the same person. And so, although he's not attracted to Jack, he doesn't want anything to do with Jack, but with Claire, whom he loves and adores, he does want those dual things. And the fact that he brings up Wentworth, I mean, he says he became more aware of it after Wentworth, but soon after Wentworth, which means there is that connection. So he's not associating Claire with Wentworth by any means, but this kind of dichotomy he feels with what he wants to do with her and to her and for her is a very interesting, I guess, direction. He puts his hands on her head and says, "I want to hold you like a kitten in my shirt, but I still want to spread your thighs and plow you like a running bull. I didn't understand myself." So I think here, actually, not so much the pain part of things, it sounds like he's trying to deal with the fact that he wants her to be both Madonna and whore.
That's what all men want.
Of course, but I think that's what he's struggling with. One of the things. What do you think?
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying that I think that's almost all guys want that.
So Claire answers that it's often the same for her. LNG shares, "Jamie still possesses his naivete about sex and is finding these circumstances frustrating. But when Claire tells him she feels that way too and what she wants to do to him, I think he finally realizes he's not alone in his feelings." Ellen also shares, "Then we are slapped with a quote. I thought at first that Jack Randall had stolen a bit of my soul, and then I knew it was worse than that. All of it was my own and had been all along. It was only he'd shown it to me and made me know it for myself. That's what he did that I cannot forgive. And may his soul rot for it." So what do you think about that?
I mean, it pretty much just sums up everything we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm. "They make love and do as they must." Then Claire says, "And sometimes I wish it could be you inside me, that I could take you into me and keep you safe always." He puts his hand on her belly and says, "You do, my own, you do." And I wrote, "The quickening, the first Fraser baby flutters." Claire has a sense of someone with a capital S. Jamie gets ready for the day and leaves. And Claire says to the little one, "Hello."
Join us next week when we move on to part 3 of Dragonfly and Amber. Third part is entitled Malchance. Chapter 18, which is entitled Rape in Paris. So I think we all know what's going to happen in chapter 18.
And what's going to happen and where. It's gonna happen. And a little birdie told me we might have a guest next week.
For our read-along?
But I don't know. We'll see.
It could be fun.
Maybe. Thank you as always so much for listening. We really, really look forward to our next episode.
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night. My young love.